we go. The Chuck Curley, Sherry Elicker Show. We're live on a Memorial Day. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. Happy Memorial Day to you. I'm watching so many cars driving by the house here as they're all trying to avoid I-90 and the great big backup. We'll continue to give you traffic delays, and there'll be many as people head back home. And here she comes out. There you are.
Hello there.
Hello. All right. It's weird. I've been reading so much about Memorial Day. It's odd to say Happy Memorial Day, right? It's supposed to be. It really is a day of remembrance of those who've lost their life. She's sort of like, Happy Memorial Day? You know, doesn't it always seem odd? Does that seem like you're not supposed to put a happy in front of there somehow? Because it's become more a day of a day off and barbecues and, you know, buying mattresses and cars and stuff like that. But, what else you would put in?
Yeah, I mean, it's a day that people don't really observe like they should and take a moment to understand that, you know, this is supposed to be about honoring the people that have served and kept our freedoms mm-hmm. and done remarkable things. But like you said, most people, it's a day off. It's a day to go out and shop some sales and eat some hamburgers and hot dogs.
All right. It is a traditional day, as it is tradition. I dive into the news. Diving in the Refreshing. All right. Yeah. You know, it was interesting. It was Abraham Lincoln at the Gettysburg Address, which is, I remember he had to memorize it. It was like 238 or 260 some words or something. He spoke for only about 2.5 minutes, but it was right after the Gettysburg Address. And I think it was the next year that a lot of families started laying, you know, flowers and stuff at the graves of their fallen sons and fathers. And then it kicked into a little bit more high gear and after World War One, and I think it was 1971 or something like that. But I forget what year it was that they made it official holiday that it would be on that Monday that they'd be Memorial Day. And again, it's, you know, how do people celebrate it? It's, and those that have lost loved ones in war, I've seen it. They go to Tahoma Cemetery. There is also Arlington Cemetery. There's some of the big ones that people have been able to see. And it is quite striking. Have you been over there to the wall for fallen vets through the Vietnam War? Have you been to that vet dedication? Have you seen that?
Yeah. It's really something. And I watched a thing today, which was really beautiful. USAA, which is the insurance company and whatever, they have mm-hmm. this poppy wall where it's all these poppies. I mean, it's really something, you know. And so a lot of people, I mean, we also just went through Rolling Thunder, which is the motorcycle. Just huge number of motorcycles just go over the 14th Street Bridge and down by the Pentagon and all of that. And that's a yearly tradition. So, you know, around here, you do get some, you know, just the proximity of some of these reminders kind of keep you in focus a little bit more.
Yeah. It is hard because once the war is not there and people sort of their lives get back to normal again, and you don't really feel the need to fight for anything in particular. And that probably the survey that came out right after Russia invades Ukraine, there was a survey taken of Americans, and I forget the age group they put them in, and they asked, what would you go to war if, as in Ukraine, the United States was invaded by another country, would you fight? 38% said, no way, I'm out of here. And off to Mexico or Canada. What is it worse than that?
Yeah, 52% of Democrats said they would take off. 68% of Republicans said they would stay. But it comes down to about 38% of all Americans would hit the road when they were asked, you know, if you were invaded, would you stay and fight? 38% of all Americans said, nope. Hit the road.
So on our soil, on the soil of America, that we would have some invading force and people would get in their cars, leave their homes, leave their towns. I mean, it'd be really odd, wouldn't it be? If you were in your car or in your home and you see your neighbors sort of planning and getting ready, you know, whatever they're doing to sort of fight, to stay and fight. And then you get in your car and you make a left-hand turn and get onto I-90, or no, get onto I-5 and head north to Canada. So you're leaving your neighbors behind, maybe family members behind. You stay and fight, I'm leaving. Then, in this scenario that we're creating, let's say we win. The person gets back in their car and comes back to what's left. And hopefully their house is still standing, but their neighbors are still there, but they left. They left, but they came back because they like their life, but they're not willing to fight for whatever it is that they feel has value. So off they would go. I have to question that survey, though, because it's such a hypothetical. And most people can't even, that are alive today, that, you know, haven't experienced war. I don't think you could possibly really wrap your mind around it. Because if you all of a sudden, remember after September 11th, how America rallied, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think people would stay. I think they'd fight.
Well, I mean, in Ukraine, some did stay, but millions also fled the country. I mean, many of them left. And I think it depends on your circumstances, right? I mean, if you are not able to really, I don't know, be productive in a war, maybe it's better to leave. If you really can't contribute anything, whether you don't have the body strength or the age, you know, you're too old or too young or something like that. But I think that, you know, most Americans, I don't know, I think it's just such a hard concept to wrap our head around because we've been so fortunate that we've never had to deal with something like that.
Yeah.
So it's difficult to know what you would do in the moment, that if it was right outside your door, what would you do?
I had the luxury of traveling to Vietnam. Yeah, Jacob, I was in the S, okay? And I was talking to somebody there, and I asked him, you know, how'd you feel about the war? And it was an older guy. The average age there in Vietnam, this is 10 years ago or something, was 24, very young country. This older guy, I said, what are your thoughts on the war? And he said, which one? Because so many people had plowed through that country and killed people, and that country has been at war so many times. I said, how about the Vietnam War? And then he told me what he thought of the Vietnam War. And fast forward to a couple of years afterwards, I'm living in Sammamish, and God, that's cut my grass and stuff. Really great guy. He's missing this finger. His right index finger is gone. And I asked him if that was a gardening accident or something. And he explained to me, he said, you know, when I was over in Vietnam, living in Vietnam, and the North Vietnamese and the Chinese would come through the villages and they would collect the young men that they wanted to fight to join with them. And they would basically force you into fighting. So we would know that they were coming, so we would cut off our trigger fingers. And then they would leave. They would leave. But then they became more desperate. Later on, they would, in the later 60s, hitting into early 70s, they became more desperate for more soldiers. So they didn't care if you were missing a trigger finger as they came through the village. We would get word that they were coming. And one person would get their hands on a grenade, and they would dig a hole into a wall. And then everyone that wanted to would put their hand, their right arm, the right hand inside this wall, and somebody would pull the pin on the grenade because they would rather lose a hand than go to war and lose a life.
That's horrifying. God. That's terrible.
Yeah, terrible. But for that country and the amount of wars that they've been in, and they just still keep fighting. But, you know, obviously in that case, they weren't exactly taking any volunteers. They were just grabbing any able-bodied man that was willing to go. And I think we are too comfortable. And we fight about stupid stuff here. But I do believe if this country were attacked, and we began to see the bloodshed of our fellow Americans, people would, I believe, would respond. They would rise up. And because when you talk to most kids that are under the age of, say, 35, even younger than that, they don't have a very good view of America. They don't think much of it. And I guess they don't think there's much worth fighting for. And that's sad because you can't love what you don't know. So if you don't know the country, you don't know what America stands for and is supposed to be fighting for, then you probably are less likely to want to do anything for it.
You know, they have a recruiting crisis going on right now for the armed forces. And I was talking to somebody who works in advertising in Chicago with, you know, the Army and some other places. And they did a lot of surveys on what it was that kept kids out of the, you know, going into the military. And the number one reason was they didn't want to lose a limb. And that's their concept of what they would be in for if they got got into a war, that they, even though the military is so broad, you know, you could be in the military for 40 years and never, ever see a day of combat, never get deployed. You know, it's entirely possible, but that's what they were worried about. And didn't want to risk it. It wasn't worth it to them.
Yeah. Hey, Jacob, for some reason, I think my computer thinks it's got the day off. So I'll ask you to fire this. It's, award-winning singer causes uproar when she changes up the national anthem. This is at the Indianapolis 500. Oh, Jewel singing it. Okay, here we go. Here's Jewel with the national anthem, according to her.
Oh, say, can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight? Broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight. All the ramparts we watched so gallantly streaming.
Folksy, hard to dance to.
Yeah.
Do you usually dance to the regular national anthem?
Yeah, I do. I march in place. All right, what's it to you? Weenie boy. So people mad that she sort of folkied it up? Is that the problem?
Yeah, they felt like it's, you know, a cherished song. But other people pointed out, look, people have been doing their own versions of the Star Spangled Banner for a very long time now. I don't particularly like this one. I don't think it's very good. But I don't think it was disrespectful. That's what people were saying, is how dare you, you know, change it. I was expecting her to change the words, but she didn't.
Whoa. Yeah. It's the Indianapolis 500. Come on, right? It's Chris Stapleton.
Yeah.
They cheer? Oh, I don't even know.
A little bit. Not
her.
Too much. Not too much.
Not too much, yeah. Yeah, that's American apple pie. That's the Indianapolis 500, where a wheel flies off and goes into the crowd and almost kills somebody. The Chris Stapleton's was that the Super Bowl? Yeah, he killed it at the Super Bowl when he did the national anthem. Cameras sliding across the faces of the players and the coaches, and they're wiping tears away. Do you have that one?
Yeah, I have that. I don't know if we have time to squeeze it in here.
Yeah. All right, legally, I have to play the whole thing, Sherry. So,
okay, I'll stand up.
Obviously, yeah.
Chris, all right, this is Memorial Day. Here we go.
And you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight past gleaming whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight. Oh, the ramparts we walked were so come on.
Votes are in. Son, you know how Jewel's going to sing it. Why are they all upset about it? You want to see America, you should go on the Easton Memorial Day Parade, Sherry. That was America right there.
That's right. That was a celebration of our country right there.
Quarter mile of a lot of people that didn't bother to sign up to be in the parade, but just decided they would jump in the parade, which then I had nothing. I had nothing to say about them, so I just had to read the side of their trucks. It's Patriot Paving since 2019. Pave your driveway. Because they're supposed to sign up, and then I get the little sheet of paper. I'm supposed to read about these people. But the nice lady, she goes, gosh, people just sort of jumping into the parade. So a lot of guys, you know, that are in the septic business, they all got in. And a lot of guys with backhoes and just people with just regular cars just riding by. Some guy just drives by in a regular car. You're like, hey, it's a guy in a regular car.
Yeah. But see, they're all patriots.
He'd actually stop. He'd stop good. In front of the judges stand, like, how about this Chevy Impala?
was there a contest?
Oh, yes.
Oh.
Yeah, it's a contest. Oh, yeah.
Well, you got to give us an update on who won.
I'll give you an update, because when our people that we got in there, right, the Jackson family, and they were throwing not small candy, but full-size candy that one would find at a movie theater. That's what they were throwing out of their float. I can't talk too much about it. My lawyer has told me just keep it quiet for now until we serve them the papers. There you go, John Curley, Sherry Ellicker Show, and you right along for the ride. Much appreciated. I went to the game yesterday, Sherry, into extra innings, and a hard hit, foul ball off to the first baseline, and that young man can't handle it. And that young man was Rye. Hit it right in the hands. And Rye said, oh, my God, Dad, when it hit me in the hands, I wasn't in the right position for it, and it bumped out ahead of me like about 10 inches, and I was about to reach out, and then all these people jumped in. And all I kept thinking about was like, oh, Rick Riz is probably commenting on my fielding. And he's just ruining the whole rest of the game.
Well, he was very close. I mean,
close. Yeah, that's good enough. Maybe for you, like in cornhole and grenades. Does it count? Oh, horseshoes. Horseshoes and grenades.
Horseshoes, yeah. Okay.
Not cornhole. Anyway, I got hit in the face at the Memorial Day parade. We throw a lot. They come along, the fire department, Kittitas County Fire and Rescue coming by now. And they throw like little bits of candy out to the kids, sweet tarts and stuff, you know, little stuff. But oh no, the Jackson family and their gigantic, Ride the Duck with like 15 people on board were throwing not full size, but full size. Like if you go to a movie, and you get the gigantic, I didn't even seen this before. Normally the Three Musketeers, they were throwing seven Musketeers. These bars were so big. And when it stopped in front of the stage where I was, they just candy rained down, striking me. It blows about the head, face, shoulders. Just, I was covered in big bars of candy.
Now,
huge
was
candy.
Was that deliberate on their part, throwing them randomly?
It was not an accident, Sherry. One doesn't throw a big buddy at somebody randomly. A big buddy?
But probably not a big buddy because that's gum.
Okay. Right? Well, something came. Well, why is that not okay to throw? How about a marathon bar?
There you go. Now that's a possibility.
What are you guys talking about? Are any of these modern candy?
Modern candy.
Modern candy? You mean the one
What's
that has...
What's a modern candy?
Oh, it's got a place you can plug your phone into.
Yeah.
It comes with a USB cord.
Right.
Yes. Well, it's made by AI.
I think you think of a Big Buddy as... I think you've gotten this confused a little bit before about what a Big Buddy is. Because we've talked about Nutty Buddies.
You're a Big Buddy fan.
And that Big Buddy was a... the gum, I believe, a big giant thing of gum, which they may still sell. It may still be a modern candy. I'm not sure if it's an old candy.
Are you saying
that the family
Whitley.
Targeted
it was
you?
Whitley. Yes. Whitley Jackson. She's like, I don't know, like 12 or 14. She was one that started it. I don't think Ford, the little boy, was really nice. I don't think he wanted to hit me, but then the rest of them all jumped in and all throwing candy. And this one kid said to me, excuse me, sir, I know you're famous. Do you mind if I get the candy that bounces off your head? I was like, go right ahead. So he loved the fact that he said, more people, I'll stay next to you because apparently people like to throw candy at you. Then he would gather up all the candy that was being thrown around at me. So,
well, that's a smart move on his part. But
Very smart. He said to me, my mom says you're famous. Are you famous because of your hair? It's like, yes, that's exactly why I'm famous.
Well, it's one reason. There are others, but that's
perhaps
one.
You've seen me in those commercials where I sit there, I'm reading a magazine with my legs crossed. All right. Anyway, by the way, this is also a question that people have to ask themselves. Are you okay with the idea of having your spouse track you on the phone? So spouse location. So it's like, I want to be able to, you know, friend find or follow you on your phone wherever you're going. And as soon as Jacob said, do you guys mind that? Or would you be okay with that? Both of us said, nope. No tracking. Why were you so adamant, Miss Sneak Out in the Middle of the Night?
I don't know. There's just something that seems sort of invasive about it. You know, it's like, Trevor would never track me. Like he couldn't care less. I mean, he would not be concerned. Okay. I might track him if I'm worried because Trevor, you know, he goes to a lot of different places. So, I mean, yeah, I might be worried about him or something like that. I'd be more inclined to want to do it than he would. But they're saying that this tracking dependency, because people now are tracking people, you know, when they go to the grocery store and they want to know, well, what aisle are they in or when are they coming home, you know? And they're saying this is not healthy for a relationship. And that, you know, this one woman said that it's a passion killer because as a therapist, she believes that passion is rooted in novelty and distance.
Yes.
So when you're too close, you know, like they say, familiarity breeds contempt. When you're too close to someone and you know their every move and their every whatever, it kind of takes the magic out of something. I don't really think that's the case. I just think it's a little bit, I don't know, it's kind of gross, like that you'd have to track somebody and know where they are at all times.
Was it Esther Perel that said that? Is that who that, because she's the Belgian relationship expert. She's the one that talks about it's the space between the two people. She said, you'll meet somebody and then the other person, and then that you'd want to spend all of this time really getting to know one another. So you, because you want to close the distance, and create, you know, more intimacy. But Esther Perel in all of her TED Talks talks about, no, it's that distance between the two of you. It's in that space where there is space between you. That's where real intimacy can be, because if you're too entangled with the other person, there's no, you know, there's no surprises, you know, everything about the person.
No mystery.
There's nothing, no mystery, right? Yeah. There's nothing in there to sort of discover, you know, people, oh, that's my better half, or, you know, we're one person really. She said, that's when you get that kind of thing where there's nothing, you cannot desire what you already have. That's her big killer line in that TED Talk that she gives, Esther Perel. Hmm. So,
yeah, I mean,
here's my advice to you, Sherry, to keep the spice and the romance alive. Just disappear for like 2 weeks. Just leave.
Can I have 2 weeks off to do that, or do I have to still work?
Well, you got to keep working, but just don't tell.
So just sneak back into the house and hope that he doesn't notice that I'm upstairs doing a radio show. Okay. I'll get right on that. Thank you.
And then sneak back out again. All right. There. Okay. That's my advice to you. That's Esther Perel for you. back to it. Hopefully you're listening while you're outside of this. Scott Calloway. He's a professor, what, at NYU? Is that right, Sherry?
Is he at NYU?
Yeah. Again, my computer not wanting to work today, Jacob, for some reason.
Okay.
So this professor says that young people, quote, should never be home. And he's got the people from Gen Z folks are up in arms about this.
You should never be at home. That's what I tell young people. Home is for 7 hours of sleep and that's it. The amount of time you spend at home is inversely correlated to your success professionally and romantically. You need to be out of the house.
Is there anything else you want to say, Professor? That's it?
we can hear a little more.
That's the thing that upset everybody. No, that's all right. So just go outside. I mean, every time when we were little kids, my mom would come in and say, go out of the house, couch hogs or something like that. And she would come in, shut the TV off, and then throw us outside and lock the doors and just didn't want us in, especially on sunny days, nice days. When my kids were little, if they were inside too long, I would go downstairs in the basement and shut off all the electricity and force them outside.
I didn't know that one. Yeah.
Well, this is not geared for children. This is for young adults. He says the amount of time you spend at home is inversely correlated to your success romantically and professionally. You need to get out of the house. And some of the reaction was, such a privileged perspective and not attainable in this economy. Another one said, out of touch completely. Another one, remote worker here who makes $300,000 and married with a baby. Haven't been outside in a week.
Okay.
So I think people are saying, look, I spend a lot of money to, you know, pay for my apartment, whatever. I'm not going to be outside of it just for the sake of being outside of it.
No, he's talking to the Gen Z, whoever. What year is that? How old are those people? Yeah. It's the fact that you sit inside all day and you either play video games, don't do anything. You're not socializing. You're not involved in the world. You're not out and about exercising. You're not being involved with other people. You're not putting yourselves into awkward situations where you have to meet people with eye contact and handshakes and stuff like that. And just interacting. Get out. Meet people. Socialize. Be better about just communicating with other human beings that are not online. That's what he's saying. Get outside. Experience life.
Yes, he's saying, I think we may have a cut of him saying this, but he's saying, you know, if you're in line at Starbucks, make conversation with the person in front of you and behind you. It's awkward, but you need to do it, and that it will help you accept rejection. Because he says the only thing he can guarantee in life is that you're going to get rejected over and over and over again. And that, if you can learn to accept that and deal with it, you're going to be in much better shape.
That's right. Zig Ziglar, the famous, power of positive thinking guy and the sales guy. And I think he was selling vacuums or knives door to door. Imagine selling knives door to door nowadays.
Oof, wow.
And you'd go in there. And he said every time he got a no, he'd knock at a door. He said every time someone said no, that meant he was, I'm that much closer to a yes. I'm like, it's one way of looking at it. You know, brutal, huh?
Right. Good luck with that. You know it's so not true.
We had a guy come to our house to sell encyclopedias. My dad happened to be staying, came over for the weekend. This guy comes in on a Friday or something, knocks at the door, completely unannounced, knocks at, hi, how are you? He had gotten the fact that we had just had kids. He got the list from Swedish Hospital. And then he would knock on doors of everybody who had just, recently got a baby. And he was selling encyclopedias, Encyclopedia Britannica. And the internet hadn't quite gotten into everybody's home yet. But this guy, my dad, being a sales guy, said, let's hear the pitch. The guy comes in, sits down, does the pitch. He finishes, does the close. And my dad says, we'll take it. I said, whoa, why? We don't need that. Hey, that was a great sales pitch. You should encourage that type of salesmanship. We'll take the whole thing. So we got this stupid Encyclopedia Britannica, and every month they'd send us another one. Oh, here comes QRS or whatever the next pile of letters and piles of books. I don't know if we ever cracked those things open. They still have that kind of new Encyclopedia Britannica smell on them.
Did you do the Swedish death cleaning with them where you just got rid of them and said, I'm not, we're moving them along to have somebody else take them over?
I don't know where they went, but my dad was, salespeople are the best people to sell to because they feel sorry for you as a salesperson.
Yeah.
And then they're more likely to buy. But my dad's like, hey, great pitch. We'll take the whole lot.
What?
Did he pay for it?
No.
Oh.
I'm going to say no. I think no's the right answer. All right. Doesn't matter.